Thought Leader Thursday this morning, Greg Warsak is here from the Associated Bank. From Associated Bank, he's the Senior Vice President and Illinois Market Manager for Commercial Real Estate Division. And we're going to have a nice conversation this morning about real estate. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be here.
The markets, Wall Street has been up and down, and there have been some concerns about inflation. But here in Chicago, the word we're hearing on the street is that small businesses are still optimistic. Real estate is still hot. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. It's there's still a fair amount of investor demand for real estate in Chicago. Actually, I would say throughout the U.S., but in particular, Chicago continues to see strong demand from the coasts and from foreign buyers.
Is there a portion of this that's hotter than the others? Like I know we've talked about in the past commercial real estate like apartments and condos, and then the industrial part of that. Which is the hotter?
You know, it's interesting. I would say over the last 3 to 5 years from a lending perspective, and it feeds into the investment side, is multifamily, retail, and industrial have been the three strongest asset classes, sort of in that order. But most recently, really industrial has kind of moved to the top, if you will. Multifamily is starting to tighten up a little bit. There's a lot of product that's been brought to market. Retail, well documented the challenges there with tenants that are being impacted by e-commerce. But industrial continues to thrive and really grow, and there's a lot of investor demand. There appears to continue to be a fair amount of tenant demand, and again, getting back to the e-commerce, it's impacting retail in a negative way, but impacting industrial in a very positive way.
So give us a specific story, if you can. Is there an anecdote, or is there a specific case story that you want to share that sort of illustrates this?
You know, we finance a fair amount of industrial in Chicago, and some of it we do on a spec basis where we see, and what I mean by that is there's no tenants when we start construction. And a lot of that is driven by certain submarkets within Chicago where there's just a lot of interest, a lot of demand from tenants, but there's nothing available. So in the industrial space, developers 50% of the time will put up buildings that are completely empty, trying to meet the short-term needs that are going to come up from potential users. And the big thing driving that continues to be, distribution, e-commerce, food distribution. You know, Chicago continues to be this hub within the Midwest where you can reach 40% of the households in the United States within one day. And that is a critical element that continues to drive the industrial business in Chicago. It's not just Chicago. It's a regional and national distribution focal point for the country.
And that sort of gives us a sense of why it's not much of a gamble for the people to put up buildings like you described. You put up a big building that's empty inside and you can fill it with something later.
Yeah, it's, vacancy has started to creep up lately, but I don't get too concerned about it in the short term. I like to look at it on a more granular basis and look where that supply is on a submarket by submarket basis. And when you deliver a couple of big buildings, it's going to drive up your vacancy in a little bit in the short term. But the reality is that can come right back down with a couple of execution of big leases. I mean, look at Amazon. They now have 16 facilities in the Chicago metropolitan area. So, there's a driver right there. That's just one.
Mm-hmm. I know people like to hear stats, and the most recent stats we have available during the first three quarters of 2017, 18.3 million square feet of industrial space delivered, 12 million square feet under construction.
It seems like a lot, but again, you got to break that down. There's a lot of submarkets within Chicago, and some of those numbers even report what's happening in Southeast Wisconsin and Northwest Indiana. So it's a pretty broad metropolitan area that they're reporting for. And if you break that number down into the buildings and submarkets, it's really not that much.
Most of the construction activity, according to this report, in the I-55 and I-80 corridors. You mentioned Wisconsin. Everybody remembers Foxconn. That's still unfolding. So this is a ripe area for investment.
Yeah, great area for investment, a great area from a lending perspective. It's an area where we do quite a bit in that space on both a build-to-suit and spec basis.
Let's talk a little bit about the office market. The suburban office market is struggling. Recent reports said that there are a lot of vacancies there. They're having problems filling those spaces. What's going on in the suburbs?
You know, the suburban office market has been really pretty choppy for a long time, and a lot of it is, you know, it's well documented that companies continue to move downtown, leaving behind blocks of space that are driving up vacancy quite a bit. I mean, on average, you're talking about 20 to 25% vacancy throughout the suburban office market. And what you're seeing is it's a lot of old stock. There's just not a lot of new office buildings being built in the suburbs. Unless they're build-to-suits.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs a lot of money to retrofit and update these buildings to get them to the level that tenants are looking for these days, and it's just hard to for landlords to justify that investment. It is a very big number to do capital improvements to lobbies, add amenities, make the space look new and cool like the tenants want it now.
Mm-hmm. The one report I saw, they actually used the phrase that some of these properties are functionally obsolete.
Unfortunately, that is the case for several suburban office buildings. It really does beg the question, do you at some point tear the building down? And some landlords have done that just to save on real estate taxes and carry. That's pretty dramatic, but you know, it might be necessary for some buildings.
So what turns this around for the suburbs? Is it just that Chicago will become overbuilt and it's just going to be a natural progression back to the suburbs, or what?
You know, it's a great question. I don't know the answer yet, but you know, what we are seeing is, you know, there are companies that want to be out in the suburbs. A good example is Zurich, who's been out in the northwest suburbs for a long time. They occupied two large office buildings, and they could not find a building that met their needs. So they built a brand new state-of-the-art building for themselves and moved and really contributed to the large vacancy increase that's occurring in the suburbs.
Yeah. One other story that we saw is the Woodfield Mall story, where the owners of that mall, they went in and did what you said. They changed some stuff around, rebuilt, added some amenities, did some things different. Their occupancy rate almost went up almost by 36%.
Yeah, that was the Continental Towers, which was one success story. There are value opportunities in the suburbs. The challenge is, you know, for developers to find those buildings, you know, buy them at the right price. The key is buying them at the right price, because then you need to layer in the capital improvements and then re-tenant those buildings. And that is the challenge out in the suburbs right now, is finding the tenants.
The big story that we've been reporting on for the last week or so is the story about John Hancock Center. No longer the John Hancock Center. They actually wanted their name taken off of the place. And so I guess the naming rights process is going to continue on this. Talk to me about what's going on behind the scenes here.
I actually found the story to be a little bit amusing, just because you don't hear companies having naming rights on buildings that much anymore. I mean, here in Chicago, the John Hancock has been that way for 50 years. They built that building and put their name on it. You know, 10 years ago, there was a lot of blowback when Sears, you know, the Sears Tower became Willis Tower. The reality is that all the new office buildings in Chicago, they tend to be going to the number of the building, 150 North Riverside, 444 West Lake, the new building that's just announced, 110 North Wacker. You know, at least in the meantime, John Hancock's going to go to 875 North Michigan Avenue, and my prediction is it'll probably stick being that name going forward.
Wow. It seems to me that the easy way to solve this problem, because we saw it, as you mentioned, with Sears Tower, it should be the company that built it is the company that keeps it, right?
Sounds like a reasonable.
Right. I mean, you'd be able to. But so what happens if you have tenants who are looking for a place like this, and do they shy away from the controversy that's created by the local argument about what the building is named, or do they care?
Well, There was a time, I think, when you wanted to get some level of naming rights and signage on a building. And that's still the case, you know, in some markets. But I'm just saying here in Chicago, I'm not sure that it's something you see a lot of. In the suburbs, getting signage along roadways is important, mm-hmm. more so than getting naming rights.
It would have to be, I think I tend to agree with you that it's going to just remain the number, but it would have to be a pretty big outfit to get the whole building named after it.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the John Hancock has over 900,000 square feet of office, so it would generally take a pretty big tenant that would move in there and be willing to pay something extra or maybe a premium on their lease to have the naming rights.
I don't know about you, but I still call the Willis Tower the Sears Tower.
I do too.
Yeah, and I think the Hancock will always be the Hancock. Greg, it's always good chatting with you. See you next time.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Greg Worsick, Senior Vice President and Illinois Market Manager for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. We do it every Thursday right here on the Opening Bell, and you can listen to our past conversations, including this one too, at WGNRadio.com on the Opening Bell page, and also follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz, and you can find out more about our thought leaders and listen to more conversations too at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership.